used the U.S. mail to send anthrax. Kind of funny how it
next,
just went.
Bathroom Spears broadside, September 8th, 2002 edition. Stay with us.
Push it. The old president's boy. Push it. He got a brand new toy. Push it. Down old Texas way. Hey, now look at Georgie Jr. play. Vice President Cheney meets with Enron, of course, on how to manage our oil resource. Get them rolling blackouts and a secret task force. We'll push it. Then Enron goes bankrupt after stealing us blind, but they left a trail of campaign cash behind. When asked for his records, Cheney big time declined. He said, push it. Now, before 9-1-1, Bush wasn't too bright. Did Osama bin Laden show him the light? They're both CIA boys, and they know how to fight. They push it. Push it. To the limit, and then push it. And push it again. Push it. And make no mistake, there is just so much that we can take. He's got two drunken daughters and a drug addict niece. But that doesn't matter. He'll just call up the police and say you can keep all the others, but I want their release. Push it. Now, he did booze and coke, and he doesn't deny it. But he says that he quit and is on a new diet. Now he passes out on pretzels. Does anyone buy it? Push it. Now, Bush is an artist, and he's trying to sell it. He's a bit of a devil. Doesn't think we can tell it, but it's piled up so high, you can't help but smell it. Push it. Push it. The new president's song. Push it. You know he can't be wrong. Push it. Out of the president's way. What more can a real American say? Push it. Push it! Push it!
Multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn. The rich will counsel you, wait your turn. In heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand. As soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore. Count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell. They'll never enter the door. Clearly all that you need in life to be at peace in a world of strife, the company of a man or wife and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete with faithful friends and some bread to eat, a solid roof and a room with heat and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you, nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain, the poor have water, the rich champagne, the market rises to this refrain. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. Sure as life is a strange affair, in need of some robust repair, the rich don't actually have to care. The rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim, you'll never or even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair. The richer people, they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear. They're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see. The rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor.
And welcome to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, the September 8th, 2002 edition, as you may have heard through the Bushett song earlier. I'm your host, Robert Norris. We have a special guest with us who we'll be getting to shortly, Christopher Smith, who has done a significant amount of research on street musicians and did some publishing, I guess, back in the early 90s, a local UCSC graduate. We're going to talk with him at some length, and we're going to have, of course, open phone lines in case you want to join the discussion. Grab a pencil or just listen. It's 427-3772 is the ingoing phone line here, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is indeed what you're tuned to. And you may be listening to us on the web at www.microradio.net/FRSC. We're hoping to expand our web services as soon as we get some hefty donations. And about that, hey, send in your $1,000 checks, your public service announcements, and also your inquiries if you'd like to be a part of Free Radio in some way just by donating equipment or perhaps looking for a show of your own by calling 427-4523, 427-4523. That's the voicemail for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Again, the call-in number is 427-3772. I'm going to keep an eye on the board here, and my guest might also keep a note that if this starts to flash, Chris, just let me know in case I don't notice it. That's the silent phone line we have here in the studio. And you're invited to call in. Guests, to me, are the priority, and we try to give you ample time, although I sometimes get cranky and try to force people to get to the point. So we'll try and do a little of little toleration and add toleration and toughness at the same time. How's that? Got a long show ahead of us, 3.5 hours, goes until 1:30, and so there's hopefully time to do stuff, but it all tends to melt away as we proceed, so I try to get your call in as soon as you can, and that way you'll be sure to be able to get on the air. There's kind of a schedule that I've tentatively got ready here. At 11 o'clock, we're hoping to hear from attorney Kate Wells, who has actually, because of medical problems, been cutting back on her cases, but is sufficiently concerned about not just the downtown ordinances, the anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz that go into effect, well, they have gone into effect already, but it supposedly will begin to be enforced on September 10th or 11th, by at least warning. She's also concerned with the erosion of civil liberties nationally, at the state level and locally otherwise, and of course the most recent federal terrorist assaults on the medical marijuana users group or club or service group, whatever you want to call it, Valerie Corral's group WHAM, which, as probably everybody and their mother knows who's been near a newspaper or radio in the last 3 days, was attacked by federal DEA agents several days ago, their property stolen, the leaders kidnapped and, of course, released, but still kidnapped, with the collusion of deputies and without any meaningful response, as far as I'm concerned. Without any meaningful response from the city council or the board of supervisors, although you do get a couple of statements from Farr and Lockyer finally because of all the publicity. What we need, of course, is a marijuana distribution system in Santa Cruz supported by the city and county that fills in the gaps. And I don't just mean we need it like a couple years down the road. There are people dying as we speak whose medical marijuana has been stolen by these federal agents. And I suppose you might say, well, maybe they have a big stash somewhere. Well, maybe they do and maybe they don't. But if thieves with guns and federal backing can come in at any time and terrorize and loot under color of law, we're in bad shape, particularly since our laws state otherwise. And I've, of course, been sounding this note. I sounded this note on Thursday when the issue came up, and I'm continuing to sound it. We need more than comforting words from Supervisor Marty Wormhout or gee-gosh shuffling from Sheriff Mark Tracy. We need action, and we're not going to get it unless the citizens demand action. So it's nice to have protests in San Jose, and I guess it was good that there was a protest at the county building, but I understand the protest missed going to the, Bruce McPherson, the only public official that was actually available, whose office was open. Farr's office was conveniently closed on Friday, as was Keeley's. Our local assembly person, Farr, of course, is the U.S., so they say, representative. And they also, the protesters chose not to go to the sheriff's office, which, again, I don't know who's making these decisions, and perhaps we can talk to Kate Wells about that at 11. At 12, hope to have on the air Fred Geiger, if we can get him, or possibly Scott Graham, very well-informed activists who can give us some updates on the city council race in terms of the issues that should be covered and aren't, or that are being covered and shouldn't be, or that are perhaps being insufficiently covered, and what the candidates are, you know, coming out for and what they're not. And, of course, the three big candidates, Matthew, Rotkin, and Fitzmaurice, Matthews, Rotkin, Fitzmaurice, in my mind, the likely winners, unless we have an earthquake or a real citizen rebellion, and I hope we do, it's time to really make it clear to the public what their record is, these recycled retreads that are coming back to city council for yet another term. Actually, for Rotkin, I think it's his fifth or his sixth term. And we're going to have a discussion of that around 12. So there's lots of stuff coming up, and you're, of course, invited to call in and talk about general subjects around civil rights for poor and homeless people. And, you know, that probably means most of the folks out there. If you're hanging on to your apartment and you're doing two jobs, or if you're, you know, it's you're likely in the group is what I'm saying. You already have a call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
Good. How you doing there?
I was going to ask you one quick question, and I'll even take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Are you for in any way? I don't know. Well, yeah, you're pretty much aware of it. But are you for in protecting the rights of the crooked drug dealers downtown?
The crooked. Okay. Well, I'll give you the answer off the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, the caller is probably not referring to the tobacco and liquor sales people who are poisoning and killing 100 to 1,000 times as many people as those who are buying heroin, amphetamines, cocaine, and crack. They, of course, are the real dangerous people, and it's all socially sanctioned and fine. But the question is, do I favor crooked drug dealers? Now, actually, I don't favor crooked anybody. People who rip off other people obviously are, well, they're doing bad things for a number of reasons. Even if you don't want to sit as an ethical judge, you have to look at the kind of climate they create. But I also don't like to be ripped off, and if they're going to rip one person off, they're likely to rip me off. Not necessarily just in the drug dealing area, but, you know, in some other areas. So the answer is, I don't support crooked anything. Do I support the police going in and harassing minor marijuana salespeople downtown and giving them felonies, as has been done over the summer? No. Do I support any kind of attacks on marijuana sales or LSD or psychedelics? No. Do I support decriminalization of heroin and other hard drugs and a medical solution? Yes. That's really my answer to that question.
Radio.
Sorry, we just missed you there. But rather than go into a long discussion of this right now, I'd like to, if we can, turn the conversation back, and I'll take one call on this, but turn it back to the subject that our guest is here for. That's Christopher Smith. We're going to be talking about street performing and the significance of street performing here in Santa Cruz in terms of how the city council has treated it, how the history has been in Santa Cruz. Perhaps we can even get into how things have been in other cities. I'm going to have to, Chris and I have had sort of preliminary discussions, but not a lot of extensive discussion. A lot of his work is in storage, and we're hoping to get access to it. He's written some stuff, and maybe in a couple of weeks we can actually have that more available for the public to look at, and also at least for me to take a glance at and give you my critique on. I think what we're going to do, though, to give Chris and myself a chance to set up, I'm going to play you a few interviews from the street, recent interviews from the street, which kind of give you some idea of what's going on. Downtown for All is an organization that meets every Tuesday, I think, on this week because of the city council meeting. And there is a city council meeting coming up and a large protest, large I hope, on September 10th. The normal Tuesday Downtown for All meeting will actually be moved to Wednesday. We may keep that as our new time because City Council meets twice a month, the second and fourth Tuesday every month, and usually they have a 3 o'clock and a 7 o'clock meeting, and the public comment period for general public mic discussion, and there was stuff not on the agenda, is at 7, and so if people want to talk, they can't both come to the meeting. There's a conflict. So Wednesday is going to be the new time for the Downtown for All meeting. If you want to get in touch with Downtown for All because you want to volunteer to help, you can either show up at the two protests that are coming up this weekend, Monday at 6 o'clock at the town clock, that's tomorrow at 6 o'clock downtown at the town clock, or Tuesday at 2 o'clock at the town clock, and it's actually a third protest. We have a regular thing called Merry Monday, which happens every 4:30 on Monday at Cooper and Pacific across from the Cinema 9 in front of O'Neill's Surf Shop, and there we have usually a Food Not Bomb serves food. Candidates Steve Argue, Thomas Levitt, and any other candidates who wish to come are invited to come and discuss events of the last week and the upcoming election, since they are running for Santa Cruz City Council. And we also have a television runoff, a battery, where we show videos of sort of recent police activity and action down at Pacific Avenue, or sometimes we show stuff from more historical nature, the police riot in 1994 and the massive sit-ban protest that happened there at Cathcart and Pacific. That may be coming up on our agenda. I believe on Monday, tomorrow, we're going to be showing the background to my arrest for blocking the sidewalk when I was tabling at Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe area before the forbidden green fence went in front of New Leaf Market. I'm still going to be tried for that on September 27th, and so that still is a current issue, and I think it really sort of was an early indicator of what the City Council was doing in attacking folks and, well, not just groups of people, but activists in public spaces. So let's hear a little tape, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Christopher Smith. So stay with us. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
All the time. So it's about 3 o'clock on September 1st, 2002, down here at the Potter's Hands food giveaway. And it's a beautiful sunny day, a little too warm for me, but getting cooler. And someone has been chalking in front of various musicians. You can't play, illegal to play music here. And someone attempted it right in front of poet Bert Glick, illegal to read poetry here. But Bert stopped that person angrily, and a cellist didn't like the idea either. We had a mixed reaction to the proposed illegal indications on the sidewalk. Some feel, of course, it points them out and singles them out, ruins their opportunity to do what they need to do to survive in hard economic times. Others laugh and say, hey.
Have a nice day. It's a mixed bag, let me tell you.
It's definitely a mixed bag, yes.
So, Free
Radio wants to know, we're talking with...
My name is David Kraftchow.
And you, in fact, have a nice-looking display here, a tarot reading by David Woodstock, by David of Woodstock, I should say.
I was living in Woodstock for 7 years, so that's where I became David of Woodstock.
And you've set up a nice rug, a couple of chairs, and a sort of a nicely covered table with some well-ordered tarot cards, interesting stones, and looks like a piece of sage there.
Oh, yeah, actually, folks gave it to me here, the crystal kaleidoscope. I set up here once before, and they brought me out some sage. They're really happy us here. It's hard to find a place that's happier. You're here.
You're here. And you're also yourself. Oh, thank you. Of course, it's illegal for me to sit within 4 feet of a drinking fountain, but I will ignore that.
Oh, is that so?
And with you, I will violate the law, which actually was the reason I came to talk to you. I needed your advice as a wise man, an elder, a man who probably may, to some extent, make your living by doing what you do. Is that fair?
Well, I try. It's difficult in this world, you know. I've had lots of things with the law.
Any problems here in Santa Cruz?
None in Santa Cruz. I asked the police before I set up. They said there wasn't a problem. As long as I, you know, I guess stayed a certain amount of distance, 10 feet from the walls. But, you know, then so they haven't bothered me. But I've been bothered lots of other places, man. In Woodstock, I had a 3-year court battle that ended up in federal court that I won, but, you know, I lost. Because it takes so much out of you, man.
It takes so much out of you. How long ago was that battle?
Let me see. About that ended about 3 years ago. And the issue was? Tarot cards. The church didn't like that I was reading tarot cards.
The church? Which church?
Dutch Reform.
Were you in the church? Were you trespassing on their property?
I was on a piece of property that they actually owned but sold to the town for $1 for public usage so the town could get money from the federal government. But they made a secret agreement saying that the church could say who could use it and how they could use it, this area.
Well, yeah, this sounds like a violation of the First Amendment to me.
That's what I won.
Right, so you were able to, but at how many hours of energy did it take?
And quite a few teeth, you know. You wake up every morning with your jaws clenched, you know. It's really something. You know, justice is just what they say, man. It's just us, you know.
Just them.
That's it, man.
Well, here in Santa Cruz, as you probably have heard, they have a new set of downtown ordinances that are criminalizing street performers, they're criminalizing homeless people, they're criminalizing political tablers. In fact, these are laws or extensions of laws in 1994, which we're currently violating. You can't be within 4 feet of a drinking fountain, for example. And the police, in ignoring you, are probably just not even aware of that, and I'm not about to remind them. But my problem is that I have, part of my job is to remind people that musicians and performers are under attack. So what I do is, I've been walking up the street, and to every musician I've found who's been playing, and all of them are playing illegally, I write in chalk, illegal to play music here. Now, this produces numerous responses. Some musicians are good-natured about it. Others get extremely angry and tell me that I'm violating their livelihood. And I try to explain to them, I'm not violating anything. The law is violating your livelihood. You're here just as long as the police officer decides not to fuck with you. Is that the kind of society you want to live in? And it's not the society, kind of society I want to live in. But here I am, like you, you know, they are just trying to get enough to eat, you know, to traveling money, you know. So what should be my response? Should I not exercise my First Amendment rights in order to hope that the police will take a low-profile perspective when the city council has told them to enforce all laws, when anybody can do that at any time?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm... What do you say, Doctor?
Well, this is what I would say. And for many years, most of my life, I've been very worried about the world. And I've been trying to sort of keep the world from falling off the cliff.
Yeah.
Catcher in the rye, right? Got that syndrome. But I believe, and things have turned around completely. If you think about it, all our lives, we've had Big Brother watching us. Now we're watching Big Brother. And there's lots of people watching. And I believe the fact that Rome hit 2000, that this shows on the end of Rome, and I believe that things are beginning to disintegrate, but in a way, in a very interesting way, where there really is a grassroots which is growing up, which I think is going to make things straight, hopefully in a relatively calm way. We don't want anyone, you know, bringing.
So that was an interview with a very colorful kind of Gandalf-looking tarot reader down on Pacific Avenue. And with me now on the phone, unfortunately interrupting, or fortunately perhaps, or a little of both, my guest Christopher Smith, who's patiently waiting and checking out the New York Times while we take this, I think, important interruption. We have on the air with us, well, why don't you sign in?
Well, good morning, Pierre. greetings from beautiful downtown Portland. This is Patty Annis, a reporter for Street Roots, our illustrious street newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Sun's shining through this morning, but it was a bit chilly last night. Fall's here. That means the homeless are going to start feeling the chill at night as they hover in the doorways trying to get some sleep.
And I know, Patty, you are, of course, a regular writer for Street Roots. You covered the Right to Sleep Summit here in Santa Cruz in early May. You were involved in the coalition that successfully turned back Title 14, the sit, lie, and whole constellation of anti-homeless laws in Portland. But apparently there was a sneak done by Mayor Katz in late August, and she did some administrative double work or fancy footwork and got some stuff on the books without having to go through city council.
That is so true. What we defeated were proposed additions to the existing Title 14 ordinances covering just about everything one does in public, in the parks, on the streets and sidewalks, and with drinking fountains and so on. And throughout that process, several legal civil rights organizations. Everyone was assured publicly and in city council meetings that democratic process would be employed and that there would be plenty of time for input from all concerned, and suddenly the mayor held a press conference in late August at which none of us were invited. Only the Downtown Business Association, the Portland Business Alliance, and the police department were invited.
Now, Patty, by us, you don't mean like here in Santa Cruz where we have a couple of threadbare homeless civil rights groups like HUF and then Downtown for All, but you're talking about a coalition of lawyers, social service providers, religious figures, literally dozens of people and strong organizations, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about the entire spectrum of social services for the poor and the homeless and their advocates and workers and all of the key players from them who have all along been involved in the process that defeated the proposed changes.
Now, in the studio with us today, we have a sort of a historian who's looked into street musicians in Santa Cruz and street performers, Christopher Smith, and you actually bumped him in order to give you an opportunity to get in here. But what impact does these administratively dictated ordinances by Mayor Katz of Portland have on street performers and street musicians up in Portland?
Well, it's going to have an impact on just about everyone, because what she did was announce new enforcement guidelines for an existing ordinance called Obstructions as Public Nuisances, and it's just one section of Title 14 Code, and it governs sitting, lying, standing on the sidewalks, and it has measurements. I guess everyone that comes to downtown Portland now is going to need to carry a tape measure.
Well, actually, we're thinking of color coding and staining the sidewalk here in Santa Cruz. That's one of Ed Porter's ideas, our council member who rammed this latest deal down through here in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. That's not covered in this, but let me pull this up. I've got it in front of me. The guidelines are 2 pages long, and basically what we're talking about is an ordinance that has apparently been on the books since the 1960s, but had never been enforced or was lightly enforced. And the new guidelines, just they make it illegal to sit anywhere on Portland sidewalks, and really it's not just downtown, although that's where I think enforcement is going to be mostly taking place. It's all over Portland.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stand in a group to just chat unless you are leaving 8 feet of space for people to walk through, and a group is not defined, and so that's two or more people. And the entire ordinance reads in such vague, broad terms that it's hard to interpret it, what is meant by the vocabulary used. And so, of course, it leaves it up to subjective enforcement that police can target folks, and we know who they're targeting, don't we?
Well, now, wait a minute. That allows our good police force to go after the problem people and leave the
right, decent,
clean-living folks alone.
Right. They're even exempting restaurants that have been placing so many tables and chairs out on the sidewalks and sandwich boards that you literally have to go out in the street to get around.
Now, wait a minute. You're not going to accuse your local businesses of obstructing movement on the sidewalk. I mean, people are one thing. They don't really need to be there, but signs and tables are really an essential part of an urban landscape, particularly a commercial urban landscape.
Yeah, right. And then you just think, those tables and chairs are still out there obstructing our passage when the restaurant is closed. And no one's seated there.
Well, and also, of course, I assume it's true in Portland, too, that in Santa Cruz, street musicians are barred from playing in front of closed businesses and buildings. Here we have not a complete bar on sidewalk sitting and performing, but a 14-foot bar. And since 14 feet covers most of the sidewalks in most and virtually all the commercial districts in town except Pacific Avenue, where there's, you know, a few areas where there's more than a 14-foot sidewalk, it's pretty much of a bar. The earlier in 1994, we had this kind of total sidewalk sitting ban. It was thrown out by the courts. So who knows? Maybe you'll have a similar luck. You at least have some attorneys on your team, right?
Oh yeah, and that's a growing number. We're really fortunate to have a whole coalition of lawyers up here from the National Lawyers Guild and the ACLU and Legal Aid and Oregon Law Center, which is a civil rights group,
mm-hmm.
Deeply involved with following this all the way. And so
now in Santa Cruz, we had this sort of campaign by the local right-wing paper, The Sentinel, which started ranting about crime downtown, rude behavior.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of incidents were blown up that had really nothing to do with sitting or lying or street performing or leaving an unattended backpack on the sidewalk, which is now a crime. But was there a similar media, dare I say, conspiracy, or let's say a media movement to frighten the population? Where did these ordinances come from?
No, you guys are suffering under some more drastic laws on the books and more drastic enforcement right now than Portland is, and that's sad. We don't have any of the drastic ordinances that have been described by you folks that's going on, but the press up here is coming on board too, the major press, in terms of support for just how ludicrous and how targeting these ordinances are. And, you know, prior to the mayor's most recent announcement, the two main establishment newspapers were still, they were giving us some good press and allowing us, in fact, to write lengthy commentaries from our viewpoint.
This is the Oregonian and the Portland Tribune.
Right, that's true. And then, of course, we have the other two tabloid-sized weekly press, the Mercury and Willamette Week, who are much more progressive. But I'll tell you, because of all of the work we've been doing, the meetings we've held, but appearing in front of City Council Wednesday after Wednesday and not going away, the press has taken notice of that and gradually realized just how nutty and how mean-spirited these kinds of laws are and how they affect everyone, not just the homeless. They infect the whole community.
You know, it's interesting, but you had social service providers showing up in great numbers, and we had them, too, back in 1994 when the first version of our anti-homeless laws showed up. But unfortunately, at the last summer hearings, we couldn't get the head of the Homeless Services Center, Ken Cole, to come. We couldn't get Paul Brindell of the Community Action Board to come. We couldn't get the people whose voices were important, and who have even some of them stood up against the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban. And so the city council, even those who oppose the laws, have effectively masked and avoided the reality that these are really gentrification laws that have to do with targeting homeless-looking people, whatever that is. And that fact seems to be really clearly understood by your social service providers, your attorneys, even the opposition papers, maybe even the opposition itself, supporting papers, but also I think, you know, they are essentially coming out candidly and saying, or perhaps they're not, maybe you can tell me, that this is a homeless getting rid of perhaps the bad homeless. But here in Santa Cruz, it's being posed as an issue of behavior. And that is what's...
Tactic. You know, Robert, what's going on here that's really, really important is bringing the homeless to the table, putting the homeless in the seat of doing the discussing, doing the, defining what they see as problems. And hey, behavior of homeless people is not the problem. The problem is, why is there so much homelessness? The problem is economics. And of course, because we are reading in the press here and nationally repeatedly that Oregon has more hungry people in the nation than any other state, and that we have the highest unemployment rate still. Every quarter, it comes out again, highest unemployment rate, and we're suffering huge layoffs. And this is a state with a small population. I think the whole population of Oregon is only about 3 million, you know, and you have far more than that in just one city in California. And so we're suffering layoffs in many hundreds at one time, get a pink slip in 1 hour. Freightliner just shut down. That was front page news. They're going to lay off 15,500. Multiply those employees by 3, which is a conservative number for a family of a husband, wife, and kid, one kid. And we know that most families are a little bigger than that. Mm-hmm. Multiply 15,500 by 3, and that's the layoff.
Now, what about street performers? Has there been some targeting of street performers? Has there been, have the police kind of taken preemptive action, or are people still awaiting the final?
Actually, all along, even before the mayor's announcement, the police are already enforcing a law, either that doesn't exist or that's been unenforceable.
Yeah, that sounds just like Santa Cruz for some reason.
In fact, police have kind of gone crazy up here, and they're getting bad press. And so we've now got, I'm sending these to you in a thick packet of all of the press has had an immense number of stories with photos. And believe me, photos tell a thousand words, with headlines that are even laughable in the Portland Trib especially, has this huge half-page photo of the protest against President Bush a few weeks back when he was here pushing their plan to finish cutting down what's left of the old-growth trees as an economic boost, saying it would create, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs. And
Patty, we actually... that has been all over the indie media website down here, as I imagine it is up at the Portland indie media website even more so. And we've actually, right before the show, we were playing interviews with, I wasn't, but the previous show was, of people pepper sprayed by the Portland police.
Oh, yeah.
The outrage is there.
I was there. I wrote an eyewitness report that's in this month's Street Roots, but at the same time, the other press we got was just tremendous. Fox News, Channel 12, you see, they didn't spare the photographers and news people from the establishment media in their spraying. And
it had its consequences.
Brandishing their nightsticks. So the press turned on them, and there's just been a rash of stories just lambasting Chief Croker, who's after the L.A. chief's job, and lambasting the entire tactics and quoting their remarks. And they're just an outrage. They're almost laughable.
You know, Patty, this is actually something that I'd love to cover in greater detail, but I want to ask you one more question and then roll on you, because my guest here is probably thinking of moving on to the next radio station.
Oh, and I really appreciate him giving me that time.
the question I have is, you folks, given and of course I guess it's a much smaller, just to a certain extent, a much smaller issue in terms of the violence of the police that's so overt, which came out at the Bush anti-Bush protest, but this Title 14...
Two days later, even worse, critical mass. The following Friday, the same week, Critical Mass Bike Ride had more than 650 participants. Wait a minute, I'm wrong. 800, more than 850 participants. And they were just brutalized. The police rode motorcycles into them, knocked them down, and did 14 arrests. Just brutalized them.
What was their crime?
Riding their bicycle through the streets of Portland, which claims to be the most bicycle-friendly city in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in travel magazines. So
lawsuits are hopefully getting being readied by attorneys, both for pepper spray and for the critical mass people.
What's really great is right on top of back to back every day during the past week. Not only have we done some very visible things on behalf of the homeless to get the mayor to set aside enforcement of this ridiculous sit-lay law, but at the same time, the National Lawyers Guild and several other attorneys and law firms did a press conference on Thursday and announced the filing of a class action against the police department and the state and the Beaverton police and all the other police agencies that came into town to help them brutalize people during a very peaceful protest.
Very important.
So a lot of stuff's going down right now.
Well, I hope that they now file a lawsuit around the sleeping ban, too, that will get, I guess for 2 years you've had supposedly the camping ban overturned in Portland, Oregon,
declared unconstitutional by a circuit court judge.
Even though declared unconstitutional, police are still apparently harassing people who sleep at night.
And the city, and she is our police commissioner, announced after the ruling that the city was going to enforce it anyway.
You know, I want to give my guest here, who has been silent, a chance to actually ask any questions which you might have, Christopher. Have you been following the conversation at all? Yeah.
You know what? I really wanted to get in something else that happened yesterday that I think is just super important.
Sure. Let me kind of alert you that he's going to be interested in street performing type questions, because that's his area of expertise. So you might want to cue that one up. But go ahead. What is your point? You had something that happened, very important the other day.
I'll tell you what went down yesterday, but it's on a whole different subject, but it's so important. We have a measure on the November ballot coming up, and it's the first in the nation. Oregon hopes to lead in actually requiring labeling of genetically engineered foods and genetically engineered foods that contain genetically engineered food components. And it's measure 27 for people to vote yes on, and John Robbins, your illustrious Earth Save International founder and author of Diet for a New America and May All Be Fed and so on, flew up yesterday and gave the keynote address at the dinner, at the fundraiser and all to kick off this campaign. And he drove it home about how very, very important it is to the entire world that somewhere in the United States we start getting this required because all of Europe has banned genetically engineered foods, and the United States is threatening to petition the World Trade Organization to have heavy monetary sanctions against them for it, to force them to accept all these genetically engineered
foods. We don't want to cut back on important profits because of certain hysterical voices in the extremist community who are worried about our traditional genetic engineering advantages.
The bad thing about it is airborne airborne seed is contaminating all of our organic crops nationwide. Very few of them now, we're hearing, are uncontaminated. And even some organic farmers are having to go out of business.
Wow.
I met some of them from Eastern Washington.
Unfortunately, that's not our topic, but it's a very important one. Maybe what we can do is I'd like to actually talk to you further about Title 14, but I can't really delay anymore.
Right.
So what I'd like to do, if you're able to call back any time before 1:30, we can pick up this conversation, maybe around 1 if you're going to be around.
I'll try.
And we'll do some more discussion. I'd like to know, I know you're planning protests, sit-ins.
What we're planning right now, this is huge. September 18th is Wednesday. There's a regular city council meeting that day. We were going to do a sit-in, and we were trying to keep it small and quiet and be in the mayor's office and all this, but we changed that because so many people were hearing about it and wanting in and being told no. We went through an all-day nonviolence training from lawyers and Cop Watch and a paid trainer. Now what we're going to do, we're blasting it all over the place with thousands of flyers. We're flyering all of Portland and hoping people even come in from out of town to do a massive walk around City Hall and sit down outside, but on the property. It starts at 11 a.m. We hope to have hundreds, maybe even thousands, a whole cross-section of support from all kinds of other organizations, including the Cascadia Forest Alliance, people with other issues and causes. Because, you know, our causes are all really basically one, and that is for the oppressed and the worker class and the poor class.
Hear, hear. All right. Well, we've been talking with Patty up in Portland, or Portland Patty, as I sometimes call you. Please give us a call back. Let us know. You know, I'd like to hear more about this. And of course, I always, you know, want to talk more than we have time for. So, please.
You know me, I could run on like a brook.
And you should, because you've got a lot to say. So, thanks for calling in again. Give me your full name, because I don't have it in front of me here.
Okay.
Patricia Vaughn Annis, if I'm not mistaken.
Sometimes.
Yeah. All right. All righty. Listen, thank you, Patricia, and call back later in the show if you have an opportunity, because I want to continue the conversation.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And believe it or not, our guest hasn't left yet. He's still with us. He's been kind of looking over Tom Noddy's three-page letter to the street performers, to the community, and I guess to the city council and general public. Let me give you a little introduction to Chris Smith here as I boot up the appropriate credentials. Christopher Smith holds a master's degree in music from the University of California. We're not going to hold that against him. He is a composer. I don't know if you brought your guitar with you, Chris. You're a composer for guitar. And a writer, and again, we're going to demand he pull his stuff out of storage. He did comprehensive field research on street music in Santa Cruz and San Francisco in the early 1990s. And is that all true, Chris, or are you making this up?
No, actually, it's all true. And I must say it's difficult to follow up such an important phone call as that one, and so I don't know. Hopefully we can carry the hour here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Chris and Robert.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I have a question for Chris. It's not. I've always stood up for the rights of the musicians downtown. I totally like. That's what it's all about. I mean, that's the scene. That's worth protecting. I mean, that's not even like. That goes without saying that it's worth protecting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If they can have Santa Clauses in public during Christmas, then by damn it, we can have our street musicians. You know.
Hear, hear.
The thing that gets me, though, is the people that approach me when I'm enjoying the music and ask me for change. And I look at them, and I look at the musician, and I'm like, now this person's providing me with something that abstains my interest. And the other person's, like, distracting me, and mm-hmm. I know exactly who's going to get my money.
Mm-hmm. So what's your question, Carl?
And I'd like to see spots available, but I'd like to see it like it is right now. But they got to do something about it. I totally agree with you on this. And Chris, I agree with you both. You know, I don't agree.
Well,
with
you don't know my opinion. I haven't said anything yet.
I'm saying I know where you come from. Didn't they interview you for the newspaper?
I don't think Chris was interviewed for the newspaper. Were
was
you, Chris?
No, I had, I believe, a letter to the editor some years ago in 1994, but which is where Robert, I think, picked me up.
Yeah, Chris is a fresh new voice, also possibly a wise old voice, or a wise young voice, or something.
I got him confused with somebody else.
Tom Noddy.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
Tom Noddy,
yeah. I get confused all the time, you know, with my last name.
Yeah. Okay. okay.
Well, listen, do you have another question? Do you have a question for Chris? Or?
No, no, I was just expressing that.
No
okay,
problem.
Bye.
Thank
okay.
you. So, so Chris, you and I have been kind of playing funsky wonsky for about a year, trying to get together.
Indeed.
I called you about a year ago, I guess, in the
yes.
summer. And first of all, what is your area of expertise around the street music? What kind of research have you done?
Well, I did in 1990, as part of my studies at UC Santa Cruz, I worked under John Schechter up there on the faculty, an ethnomusicologist. Ethnomusicology, for those who are maybe not aware, it's basically the study of music as culture. And that entails everything from types of music to the rituals that go around the music. And in fact, music itself as a ritual. In any case, my own interest in this stemmed probably because I'd seen street musicians in my visits to Santa Cruz in the early 1980s. I had some friends who lived up here. And then after the earthquake in 1989, that changed quite a bit what happened downtown, of course, in terms of the life, the culture, and street music. And my field research started in 1990, and then I did a follow-up study in 93, 94. So basically, it's mostly generated out of my own interest as a cultural anthropologist. I was a minor in cultural anthropology at UC San Diego and continued a subdiscipline in ethnomusicology here at UC Santa Cruz. So in any case, I had the opportunity, working with John Schechter, to do some in-depth work and interview musicians, informants, as we call them, and merchants, city officials, and what have you.
This was back in 1990.
Activity. Although the musicians were there, they were coming back, although businesses were not yet back, and of course we were entering a recession at that time. So.
How many musicians did you actually talk to?
Oh, I believe it would be on the order of dozens, probably between 15 and 25.
Did you grade them on their proficiency?
No, there's nothing like that. I think that's kind of the interesting thing. People put value judgments to the performance type or what people are doing. In general, it was more of what is happening and why, the phenomenology of street music and performance in general. Why do people get up and perform in front of a roaming audience and put themselves out there to express themselves at some level and possibly get some money or not? It's an interesting phenomenon and has a lot of different interactions as part of that phenomenon.
Well, I would think exposure, bucks, exhibitionism, meeting cool sexual partners. What would you say? You research.
No, I would let my informant speak for that. And I think one of my key informants on this, who bridged an interesting period in the history of street music in Santa Cruz, basically just wanted to express themselves, to get out there and put out their music and share that with people who were passing by. And I think that would be. In my experience in interviewing other people, is that that's pretty consistent. There's a need for people to express themselves. And you say exhibitionism, it perhaps is a form of that. But and clearly, some people actually use that as a way of making money. I mean, some people earn their keep or part of their keep by doing that.
So what you wrote was, what did you write? What kind of things did you, what came out of your writing?
Well, basically, I was trying to center in, again, this was more of a cultural study in the sense of the whole phenomenon of street music, and in particular in Santa Cruz, and I did a little cross examination up in San Francisco to see how it might differ up there. But basically, I'm looking at the interactions between the different players in this dynamic. You have the street musicians, of course, we all have seen them, walking by, we've probably ignored most of them. Some of them we probably made judgments as to, oh, that's terrible music, or they can't sing on key, etc. There are also the merchants, the downtown store owners, and people in that class are the city officials, who are, we could say, the police and the downtown hosts, as well as the passers-by, you and me, who may be walking by and experiencing this momentary interlude of music.
Right. So you ended up with a document
How many pages long was it?
Oh, well, it probably was somewhere between, if you include the appendices, probably about almost 100 pages or 75 to 100 pages.
Did you come up with any conclusions?
Well, the conclusions were, it wasn't like I laid out a hypothesis and came up with this grand theory. It was more of just trying to document it. It was a documentation in terms of what is going on here, why it goes on, what are the interactions that either enhance its ability to occur, that is, can these people play, are they allowed to play, which of course is now an issue in the forefront, which we talked about. And so mainly the dynamic around it, you know, why does this exist? Why do people do this? That was more my interest as a researcher.
Well, I guess there's some who claim that the musicians may have brought back the shopping community to the downtown when it was, you know, devastated by the earthquake. But what was the situation for musicians after the earthquake? I mean, how did the police treat them, let's say?
Well, since downtown at that time in 1990 was, as if you were here at the time, I believe you were, no? Yes.
I was here at the time. Okay, right. My focus wasn't so much on street musicians. But
No, I understand. I mean, you were a resident here. But after the earthquake in 89, basically everyone who lived here would know that there was a serious depression downtown. The downtown was basically destroyed. And that, of course, took away the mercantile operations, the businesses, and, of course, just the street life, the street musicians, performers, jugglers, whatever you have. And basically, it was flat and dead, except for these few enterprising people and people who just wanted to get out there and perform with no audience. There were musicians to be found in the Del Mar Theater, for example, which at that time was just a devastated hole and was not being used after the earthquake. People would be singing. It was a prime venue, for example, for a lot of performers because it kind of gave them a little amphitheater space where they could develop a little bit of a focused sound and they're kind of on an elevated platform.
In front of the Del Mar, you mean? Or
inside the little marquee there. Yeah, there was that marquee was open for a while, and that was a prime spot for a while there after the earthquake.
Yeah, I remember when the police informed us, political activists who were tabling against the sleeping ban in 2000, that not only was it illegal to be under the inside the protected area of the Del Mar Theater, which was closed, but it was also illegal to be under the marquee because that was part of private property. Did musicians experience much harassment from police? And was that a part of your work? Did you study how police treated street musicians then?
Sure, there were interactions, and not all of them were positive ones. But at that time, if you recall, and you mentioned Tom Noddy already, who pioneered at least the attempt to come to an agreement, a meeting of the minds between all these different players in this phenomenon in the early 1980s, by coming with some general agreement of how musicians, how performers should behave vis-a-vis the merchants,
street
vis-a-vis
performers
the city.
Guidelines.
Right, the street performers guidelines, the voluntary guidelines. And so there was a meeting of the minds and kind of an understanding of how they should act, and that was mainly in effect at that point. I think people still abided by that. I think some musicians carried copies of these with them, and if they saw someone they hadn't recognized before, they would kind of hand them a copy of this and say, well, here's some guidelines that we use to sort of, so we can all live here in harmony, so to speak.
Yeah, the guidelines, for those who, again, haven't really been following this discussion, were essentially the agreement that you would, if somebody didn't like what was happening, whether it was a merchant or another musician who wanted your place, or maybe a resident was listening to you outside his window for the same tune for 2 hours and got tired of it, that person could come up to you and say, look, I've reached my musical limit, whatever, can you move along? And the kind of the voluntary agreement, this was not have any legal force, was after an hour, you would agree within that hour, or by the end of that hour, to move along. And that he would agree to tolerate you for an hour. There would be kind of sort of a mutual agreement instead of invoking the unreasonable noise ordinances, which have always existed, still exist, and actually show the superfluousness, in my mind, of the entire downtown ordinances, which came into place in 1994. Maybe we can take it from there. In 94, actually in 93, Mayor Coonerty convened a bunch of community members. I came to that meeting, too. I don't know if he invited me. I suspect not. to propose the so-called Move Along Musicians Law. Do you remember that, Chris?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
That was the year before the downtown ordinances. Any comment on that particular movement by Mayor Coonerty?
Well, again, it's just an attempt to come in with to legislate the activity that people could otherwise, reasonable people, if they sit down and talk about it, could probably come to an agreement with. By the way, I think the time limit was less than you had suggested. I think it was more on the order of 20 minutes to a half hour in one spot was what the suggested time to play, and musicians were expected to move on.
Performers guidance?
For the street performers, yeah, for the voluntary.
Not according to Tom Noddy, who was in the studio, but perhaps I don't know about the Move On Musician stuff. I know the Move On Musician stuff was a proposal by Coonerty that, as I said, we talked about when the ACLU in those days, at least to some extent, not so much on homeless issues, but on other civil rights or civil liberties issues in town, threatened to sue. Coonerty backed off, and there was no Move On Musicians Law that year. But you remember that discussion at all?
No, actually, I wasn't involved in it directly. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I wasn't sitting there and part of the roundtable.
There's no big shakes, I'll tell you. I mean, it was no big thrill. It was. I remember first because I talked to my friend from Frank Keller from the Game-A-Lot, whose store I have not patronized for a decade because of his support of the downtown ordinances, but he's a fine person. Right. Just we disagree on this issue. He was sort of one of the backers, I believe, of this Move On Musicians Law because he was concerned that, I guess bad musicians or maybe he associated with homeless people. I'm not entirely clear. But anyway, then the next year after the police did again one of their mini riots under then Sergeant, now Lieutenant Saponi at the town clock on New Year's Eve, and there were two homeless vigils about the same time trying to get the city attorney to follow the state, what was the state precedent at that time, which is to hold camping bans unconstitutional under the Tobe case until it was overturned by the California Supreme Court. These protests downtown provoked the merchants and the Kennedy City Council. Mayor Kennedy was mayor the next year, to push the downtown ordinances, which, of course, is what we have a more stringent version of now. You remember that process at all, Chris?
Well, actually, I actually wanted to make one point that we sort of driven out.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. I
do that a lot.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I'm trying to stay in my little field here. First of all, I did want to make the point that I think people should be aware, if they aren't already, certainly, that the phenomenon of street music in Santa Cruz, in the tradition of street music, indeed, is a long tradition here. It goes at least to the turn of the century, that is, the 20th century, 1900s, early 1900s, and there are documented instances of people out there on the boardwalks playing their instrument and with their hat out and so forth. So this tradition goes back at least 100 years in Santa Cruz, and the current set of ordinances that are being entertained and now sort of postponed and possibly revisited at some level vis-a-vis street performance is trying to find out, well, we have street performance. It's a tradition here. Most people would understand it, adds to the culture. I don't think there's a lot of agreement that, yeah, the street musicians are, street performers are a good asset, a positive asset in the main. But the ordinances as they're being drawn up, of course, are dumping everybody into one bucket, which has the unintended consequences with regards to musicians or performers that I think is now the city council at this point is realizing the errors of their ways, at least in that regard, and are trying to backpedal from that. I think the recent action taken this past week by the city council kind of indicates that they're kind of looking at that going, oh my God, we've really lopped off a lot here. In terms of what they're going to do to the downtown culture, I think other comments made by even street musicians that I read this week in the Good Times, basically saying, yeah, if you destroy this, once it's gone, it's gone. And I do agree with that. And I think I don't have the solutions here. I'm just a researcher. I'm trying to document this phenomenon. But I will say that clearly it's going to be a struggle, First Amendment rights mixed in with performance rights. And if someone's standing out there performing a guitar and singing some folk songs and they have a guitar case open, what does that mean and how is that different than, say, someone who has got a sign and they're sitting saying, please, 25 cents for a sandwich or help me buy a sandwich or something like that? Those are very important issues, and I'm not sure how to solve them, but clearly the performance issue that we're talking about here, I believe that it's not going to be legislated. It's not going to be a solution that can be legislated. That's only going to lead to lawsuits, First Amendment lawsuits, and in the end, I think that the direction that Tom Noddy was going in the early 1990s, if we can get the the enmity that exists between the merchants and the street musicians in downtown, the people who basically live downtown, to really get together and kind of find a meeting of the minds. And I'm not saying that's going to be an easy process, but that's probably the only thing that will solve the negative the negativity that's flying around vis-a-vis this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the of course, what you're referring to about the city council was statements by Ed Porter, Emily Riley, seeing apparently the report of the downtown commission, which we played a little tape on last week, and we'll play some more on today, I believe, which in essence found the matter was too complicated, confusing, and rushed for them to really effectively propose the deus ex machina life-saving exemptions, which Emily Riley and Ed Porter somehow thought would just sort of patch everything up. This was a proposal that while everybody else, everyone would not be able to do anything 14 feet from a building, kiosk, bench, street cafe, drinking fountain,
right,
et cetera. Nonetheless, if they could just put in exempted zones, that would take care of it.
You said the painted areas or something like that.
Yeah, Ed Porter talked about staining the sidewalk different colors so you could know, you know, what was what. Now you could be 14 feet here, and here you could be. It's indeed one of the so-called justifications for this changing everything from for street performers, it was 6 feet from a building.
Right.
For sitting, it was 10 feet, and it's also 4 feet from a drinking fountain and 50 feet from an ATM. Although that won't be changed. That last one was to make it a uniform 14 feet from everything.
Right,
so
so
nobody can do anything anywhere,
right,
and that's
right.
Much clearer. You know, I mean, I don't know where these people get their coaching from. It's clearly they didn't come.
Well, as far as the merchants are concerned, I will say this: that one of their comments that you hear is, "Well, they musicians, performers drive away my business." And now, as far as I know, there have been no empirical studies that have actually documented that in fact is the case. And my experience has shown that someone that attracts a crowd, that attracts a group of people who are listening, possibly tossing a quarter or a dollar into the hat, that they basically could actually bring in business to a merchant who's right next door or adjacent to that performance spot, because the performers would bring passersby who would otherwise be walking by, stop, they may be listening to music, and then look in and see the window displays and perhaps see a good sale that's on or something like that, and then say, gee, hey, the store has a sale, let's go in there and check it out. So, I mean, to my way of thinking, there's a possibility for actually increasing the chance of business to occur, and not necessarily negative. But again, it's more of a perception in this case, I think, where the merchants say, well, you know, this is a bad element. There are homeless people involved here, et cetera. We don't want that in front of our store. And I just think that's the wrong way to go, because I think there's no evidence to necessarily, there's no study that would say, yeah, in fact, street musicians in front of a store decrease store sales. I don't think that necessarily is the case.
You researched that a bit yourself?
Well, let's just put it this way. I did not do research in the sense of let's see how see if there's a curve and a correlation between increased business and decrease in musicians or vice versa. But what I'm just saying is that evidence, this is what you hear from the merchants at times, them saying, well, they stifle my business, they push out customers. I'm just not aware of any study that actually shows that that's the case. I think that's more of an emotional response on their part is what I'm trying to say.
And, of course, the big problem seems to me is that the street performers' guidelines have not been widely distributed. The hosts who were supposed to be doing this became kind of an enforcement arm of the police department.
But the voluntary guidelines? Or
The voluntary guidelines.
Okay, which, right. And I don't know anyone who's carrying a copy around of them now. I haven't seen.
Well, Tom Noddy pointed out that even before these new ordinance changes were announced, in fact, a done deal by Ed Porter and Emily Riley this summer, police had violated the street performers' guidelines fatally by going after and enforcing the downtown ordinances from 1994, which said
right.
You can't be 6 feet, you can't be here,
right.
You can't be there. And this violated the understanding that apparently the street performers had, which is we'll be voluntary and work it out as long as you don't turn these anti-musician laws against us. And in fact, that's what was done by Sergeant Baker, Sergeant McPhillips.
This is, Robert, a really difficult issue because they're trying to create an ordinance that is one size fits all. And clearly there are different types of interactions that are going on downtown, but they're trying to lump them all together. But I will say, if I may, that it would be irony, I think, of a tragic irony to see, in fact, if street performers, street musicians are, in fact, pushed out where they just, you don't see them on the mall anymore downtown. That would be a tragic irony, and I think more so to the fact that there are even the statue of Rob Scribner downtown in front of Neil Cunity's store would be more of a memorial at that point than an honoring of the tradition, because it will have been flushed out of the area, and yet now we have the memorial. Well, this is what used to be here until the city officials in their grand wisdom pushed them out, and I think that would be unfortunate.
You know, I agree. I guess what might be useful to do research on, I was, again, I guess, suggesting to you yesterday that get the city council to give you a grant to research this. What has been the impact of these kinds of 10 feet from this, four feet from that, forbidden zones for street musicians and other people sitting and soliciting or even just performing in other cities like Tempe, Arizona, like Seattle, Washington? Berkeley had such laws and abandoned them in 1997.
Right,
Olympia,
right.
Washington abandoned them, actually decided on other solutions this spring. Portland, Oregon, the city council refused to bring them up and discuss them. Mayor Katz, as we heard from the last caller, did a preemptive strike there, kind of, I guess, taking a page from our Führer's book, our president, I should say, preemptive strike, and by passing these Title 14 laws in Portland administratively. But it might be useful to look at what's been the experience of other cities who have passed these laws. Have these driven out street performers? Any sense on that?
Well, again, not every city has street music. It's unique in terms of its occurrence. You could go to Ljubljana, Slovenia, and not see, although it's a town much like Prague, with little narrow streets and everything. You won't find many street performers even in summer. Although you'll find them in Prague, for example, all over the place. So it's really a unique phenomenon that doesn't occur in every city that even has what you would think would be a venue or would lend itself for that kind of activity. So one would have to pick and decide which cities are the target cities, and you had a guest on earlier from Portland, and unfortunately I didn't have a chance to ask her what kind of activity or where she sees street performance musicians at all in that area. So one would have to do a little pre-research, I think, to write a grant against what would be a where you can get some good data, usable data.
I actually found an interesting article on the net, and part of it has to do with sidewalk music. A lot of it has to do with the other issues here around driving poor and homeless people away from spaces downtown. But this, I'm going to read a little bit about this. Those who wish to play music or otherwise perform on Mill Avenue, this is in Tempe, Arizona, those who might actually try to sonically construct a pulsating street scene aren't particularly welcome anymore either. At the same time that it passed the sitting ban, the Tempe City Council also amended the city code so as to more thoroughly regulate street entertainers. Under the newly amended code, prospective street players are put through a bureaucratic grinder, beginning with a registration application detailing location, hours, activities, and equipment, and submission of a non-refundable registration fee. Those approved must in turn perform in accordance with the city's entertainment guidelines. They're required to stay within a designated entertainment location area to be determined exclusively by the city or its designee, to keep this area neat, clean, and hazard-free, to utilize only pre-approved equipment and performance techniques, and to make themselves and their equipment available for inspection by the city at all times. Note the insidious irony by which the aspiring street musicians without money aren't able to earn any because they don't have any money for the permit that would allow them to do so. Just like the sitting ban, the amended street entertainer code in Tempe, Arizona, is just another one of those attempts to eliminate anything that's potentially spontaneous or evades their control web. A permit or license always gives the issuer a kind of editorial control, a kind of censorship control. An itinerant street musician was busted on a loitering and panhandling charge for, as he says, illegally uncasing his guitar on a downtown Flagstaff sidewalk, that is, taking out his guitar, tuning it out to play, and leaving his guitar case open as a symbolic solicitation for money.
Clearly, Robert, I mean, there are serious First Amendment issues here. The freedom of expression really is what it gets down to in its core facets. If you look at what it takes, like I said, for someone to open their case and then start singing a song, whatever that song would be, whether they're just standing in their spot and playing, it's up to the passerby to acknowledge it or not, or to give money or not. They're not, in most cases, there are some exceptions, but in most cases they're not out there hammering you with their guitar saying, hey, give me some money, in a way that's aggressive in any sense that would I think, cause people to feel they're being assaulted. Mm-hmm. But really, the First Amendment issues here are someone's freedom to express themselves, whether it be singing or reading poetry. I think is that's troubling in general to me, and this is of course what's occurring.
Oh yeah, and to a lot of us. But I think the reason I was reading this was to get in the case of a jurisdiction that had done this and see what impact it had on musicians.
Right.
So I'll read a little bit further on this, and feel free, you know, to give your comments at any point. An itinerant street musician was busted on a loitering and panhandling charge, because he kept his guitar case open as a symbolic solicitation for money. And by the way, there is an amendment to the downtown ordinance that's coming up on Tuesday. 2 days from today, at 7 o'clock in the evening. It's items 37 and 38, for those of you who don't know, and I'll try to repeat that later. The downtown ordinance continuation of the absurd repression, but others might say the much justified regulation, or whatever you will. One of their proposals is to say that as long as a solicitor doesn't say anything and doesn't have a sign, you can have an open guitar case without being subject to the solicitation rules. So that means that if they suspend the non-commercial ordinances, which say you can't be 14 feet from buildings and so forth while performing, and they pass this other law which says you can have a non, apparently don't like people writing signs, you can't have a sign that says please give money or donations accepted, but you could have an open guitar case.
Right.
Again, this is a way, of course, of winnowing away the homeless and poor people and trying to me, split the baby in the middle.
Right, and to just to look at the musical aspect here, the dynamic of the performers themselves, if they're playing with an open guitar case or a hat or a violin case, what have you, some people put a towel down or something. But in any case, it's really what's going on here, and I think people should stop and think about this, is that there's a train in the background.
Yeah.
I like that. There's an implicit contract that really occurs between a passerby and a street musician or street performer in general. But basically, they're performing, they're putting themselves out there, and it is up to a passerby to regard that or not as they see fit. Now, if there's an open case, that could be an implicit, if you like what I'm doing, and I fulfilled the contract, this implicit contract here, you could drop in whatever you feel that was worth. And because to a certain extent, we're talking about the affect that's gained, a positive affect that one could gain as a passerby to say, hear a really nice song or song that they like or what you will, and say, gee, I like that. That was cool. I'll give them a dollar or something. And to that extent, there is an implicit contract going on here. Now, most people don't throw money into the hat. And in that sense, what are they? Because if you're ignoring the musician, or at least not acknowledging it in any kind of a financial or remunerative sense, then and the musician isn't sitting there singing in the lyrics, give me money now, so they're not really soliciting it in that sense, then you really have a passive situation where it's the contract and the agreement is between the passerby and the musician, and I think it's rather innocuous. And so when they glob these ordinances together, throw the panhandling and street musicians, everybody into one category, which clearly they're not. The devil's in the details how to separate that. I'm not going to claim I have those solutions, but clearly there's a kind of a different contract going on here, and one that has to do with the positive affect gained from an experience of a performer to an audience, and whether or not one acknowledges that by tossing in some money or not. So I think that's an important distinction.
You're listening to Christopher Smith. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor and other issues related thereto. We run from 10 to 1:30 on Sundays and 6 to 8 in the evenings on Thursdays. And it's 96.3 FM that your dial should be set at, unless you have a very strange radio. Call-in number is 427-3772 if you have some questions for Christopher or me. We also have our resident expert on everything Santa Cruz in the background, Scott Graham, who is waiting to... who is examining the downtown ordinance situation carefully, and will no doubt have some considered remarks on that as well. But you know, it sounds like, though, Christopher, you and I may have a point of departure here, because my point was not how to split the baby, but not to split the baby. And I guess your point is that, you know, there's a real distinction, and you put it very well, in terms of the contract between a person who decides, wow, this is great music, and I want to get into this and give them some token of my appreciation, and somebody's saying, hey, I need some money for this or that, you know, can you give me some money, addressing himself to everybody. That's sort of a different deal. But to me, these are all part of a broader, traditional reality in Santa Cruz that needs to be protected from special interests like merchants, conservative shoppers who would prefer to have a closed, gated kind of mall situation, nervous politicians who want to respond to these different groups and who have in various cities. And so when I see the city council working out this idea, oh, well, you know, we'll postpone the non-commercial ordinance till January. That is the proposal coming up Tuesday at city council. I think it's item 37 or 38 in the evening on the 7 o'clock agenda for those of you who want to go. And then they also are saying, well, oh, we'll allow the guitarist to have his case open and just not have a donation sign so that, and the political tabler can have, you know, a cup on the table but no donation sign, so mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. a person who's going through town can't have an out of gas sign or I'm pregnant, can you give me some money sign, even though they're doing nothing but holding up that sign. This to me is an invidious attempt, kind of like what the British did in different cultures, to split off one group from another, play them off against each other, and mm-hmm. you know, sort of, you play off the privileged labor union people who get their little cut of the pie, and then they abandon the masses of people or the other groups of people that are less fortunate.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's an important question. It's a serious question, and I don't think we necessarily have a point of departure. I think what I'm trying to do is say that there are two different phenomenons here, and they have different dynamics, but they have a similar overall effect, and that effect is in fact the differences are recognized by the city council by their own ambivalence over this. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong, but what I'm saying is that there is a difference here, and that's really all I'm saying. I'm not trying to posit some people are more equal than others or something. But what I'm trying to say is that they're two different phenomenons. The solicitation from let's call them panhandlers, although I don't like that term. Mm-hmm. It's probably a more PC term these days. I'm not sure.
Fair changers.
Okay.
Busker.
From that to a street musician or street performer, I mean, they're two different dynamics at work. They're two different types of situations, although they have a certain convergence sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because many of the musicians, a fair percentage, are homeless themselves.
Right.
So they do fall into a general category of being out there trying just to earn a living,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. So I think we're really not that far apart. I don't think there's a disagreement here with me. I'm just saying that they are two different phenomena. And if you don't recognize that, I think it'll be difficult to come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think that there's going to be a legislated solution here vis-a-vis street performance.
I
just don't think you can legislate it again, because there's got to be a meeting of the minds. And as long as the downtown merchants have the sense that this is a negative thing, as negative to them as, say, the panhandlers or the people who are aggressively trying to just assault right. people downtown in
right.
their perception, then right, everyone's going to get lumped up, and they'd be just as happy to see that all go away from their business perspective.
Well, interesting. That's one of the reasons that the downtown commission, I think, among the fact that there was a lot of pressure, and there were some people on the commission who thought these whole ordinances stunk to begin with, like Kathy mm-hmm. Bisbee, who's
right.
the chair. But the merchants were polled by the staff, Julie Hendy and Martine Bernal, and only 5 of the 16 said they would want to have musicians or political activists or anybody have in exempted zones in front of their stores.
Right.
And so the question then became rather stark. It would have become a question anyway, even if all of them had agreed to have the idea that somehow musicians should have a veto on who uses the public space in front of your store is, of course, constitutionally not just suspect, it's wrong. And
right.
and even so, I should say, unconstitutional an advocate as Neil Coonerty of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, who gave us these downtown ordinances to start with, spoke out against
them. Well,
that.
No, he's even backpedaling now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's recognizing that maybe,
yeah.
in some sense, more has been bit off than should have been. And it clearly, again, it's not going to be effectively legislated.
As I said to you yesterday, I think the reason he's backpedaling, and I'm not inside his mind, is because he wants
You're
to
not?
Well, sometimes I think I am, and it doesn't feel very good.
You probably haunt him.
Yes. Well, he probably. Good point. But yes. I think that he's, you know, he wants to save the existing ordinances. And if the people go further with these ordinances than the current Rehnquist court will allow, then I think he's going to find that he's going to have to, you know, listen to musicians in front of the Georgiana's Cafe or see a political tabler there, which is one of his ordinances.
I got to tell you, for example, in front of Neil's store, for some years, actually, and even today I see, but there was a cellist, there were a couple of cellists and violinists who would play in front of the cafe. Now, what's the name of the cafe?
Chocolat
or something, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But when it was just part of the cafe of the store, and they would play right in front of that spot there, and that was a prime spot. Mm-hmm. And it was a very positive experience. I think people really assembled around there and really sat in that cafe.
And they still do.
Right. So right in front of the store, there was what I would say a positive experience with it, with a street musician, a street performer. Right in front of his store. Right. And again, I think it would be an irony if everyone gets flushed down.
Well, it's not an irony. It's illegal to do that. Since 1994, any musicians in front of your store, in front of an open-air cafe, have been illegal. What has happened, however, is no one has complained.
Right, right.
And let's put it this way. The police are not enforcing. But now we have found, as of the spring, they began enforcing and driving musicians out of town. Looks like we have an incoming call here.
Oh, my God.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
The insanity of this whole thing, which seems to be overlooked, is the only reason Santa Cruz is Santa Cruz is because of the street musicians and the life. If you want to spend money, the shops in Carmel are much more expensive.
Right.
If you want corporate stuff, go to the mall.
Right.
We don't have any of that.
Capitola Mall, you mean.
Yeah, right. Right. You know, Capitola Mall or any of the other malls, right. You know, any mall, USA or now worldwide. The aliveness is what everybody, practically internationally, mm-hmm. knows about Santa Cruz.
Exactly.
And they want to kill the goose that lays the golden
egg. And that's my whole point, is I think that most people in moments of relative sanity, merchants included, would say, overall, this is a positive phenomenon downtown. But they're at odds with what their perceptions are and their own say prejudices regarding musicians and maybe their walk in life and so forth and what they represent, good or bad. But that's, I think, what's happening, and it is unfortunate.
You know, I have another take on this. I think that primarily the merchants are not after the musicians. In fact, Candy Jackson's petition had nothing to say about mm-hmm. street musicians. This is something that came out of the police department, Parks and Rec, and the Redevelopment mm-hmm. Agency, and Ed Porter and his little behind-the-scene machinations with these folks. And it is primarily, this became an occasion for the police department and those groups to push these laws through. Now, the point I am concerned about is, while I hear both of you talking about street performers, they're not going to be an issue anymore. They are going to be put on the back burner until January. It's going to be okay to have your guitar case open, and everything will be exempted if you have your guitar case open, but no sign after, I guess it'll take till November for that to go into force. If it passes today, if it passes on September 10th, it has to be read a second time on September 24th, and a month later on October 24th, it will be technically legal for musicians to have their guitar cases open, provided they aren't violating other laws, and the non-commercial ordinances will be suspended until January. Those are done deals. Those are on the City Council agenda. Right. They will be passed, probably unanimously. My concern is, what about the rest of the community of poor people, of skateboarders, hacky sackers who are being driven away? And so I want us to make sure that we don't spend too much time lamenting the street musicians, because I think the City Council never intended, the merchants never intended for them to be covered. They are going after the poor people downtown.
Absolutely no question that this is the most repressive anti-homeless law probably in the country. And it's disgraceful. When you make being poor a crime, all that you do is make the poor into criminals, and then you can lock them up, which apparently seems to be the aim for some stupid reason.
Long live Gray Davis.
This is, exactly. I mean, this is, guess what? A social problem.
Yeah.
You know, because it's ugly and it makes you uncomfortable because it reminds you you're one or two paychecks from the street yourself. And, oh my God, how did I get $60,000 in credit card debt and look what happens? That's your problem. The fact is that there is a responsibility in any society that is actually mandated by the UN, using the ideas of Eleanor Roosevelt, an American, that we are responsible. We are our brother's keepers. And when I see the hatred of people without adequate shelter, people who are very poor, very, very poor, it appalls me.
Well, of course, it's a natural thing. You know, it's the old control deal. If you can kick the dog, that's what you do when the boss kicks you. You know, and I guess my concern is to find a way that we can bring this all together in our protests on Monday at 6 o'clock at the town clock, where we're going to march to the SCAN Forum at 7 at Loudoun Nelson, and then on Tuesday at 2 o'clock at the town clock, when we're going to march to City Council at 3, and I guess somehow end up at 7 o'clock at the 7 o'clock session. We didn't know which session they were going to do this at, so we assumed it might be the earlier one, so we've scheduled the protest earlier in the day. But to keep the community together and focused on the issue, I don't think it's true, for instance, that we may not have the worst anti-homeless laws in the country, but for Santa Cruz, these laws are very peculiar. And as has been pointed out by, I think, many people, who some of whom have real concerns about rude behavior by some people downtown, sexual harassment, the one or two stabbings that happened, the shooting that happened with the gangs.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with
exactly. It has nothing to do with the conduct ordinances. And this is the point. It's not just that the city council is a bunch of stupid dodos. It is rather they have another agenda that is being slipped in while these other issues are being raised by the Sentinel and so forth. And also, of course, it's around election time. And I continue to think some of the backdrop is the utility tax repeal, which is just like in 1994, Kennedy did his dirty deal with the downtown merchants to pass these original downtown ordinances because he wanted to rebuild the earthquake, and he fundamentally changed the progressive perspective on this, which was in the past they would to some extent try to hold the line for poor people, though they never could get themselves to end the sleeping ban or pass rent control. They still made some motions in that direction. Yet in 94, Kennedy came up with this coalition deal with the merchants and passed this stuff, and Rotkin jumped on board, and Matthews did too, also running for city council now. So I want to hold together this coalition somehow that I think is beginning to grow. It's grown in other cities. If you listened earlier, you heard Portland, Oregon had a massive coalition that fought it back. Olympia, Washington did too. Berkeley turned it around. The question is, how can we do it here? And more important, how can we expand it so we get a plaza downtown, so we get a yellow bike system, so we get meaningful rent control or some kind of alternatives for real affordable housing for people, so that Camp Paradise, which is being destroyed in a week, that's the latest that's being run up by the county, which is coming to city council, can have some alternatives. So,
yeah, well, you know, one last thing and then I got to get off.
Sure.
Under current laws, the only thing a homeless person can do after dark is kind of, they have two choices. One, if they can just kind of disappear into space, because they're not allowed to be. And the other alternative is they can walk through the dark hours, and as long as they don't have a blanket around them, and just kind of walk for the 12 hours of dark in the winter. This is not the way a social problem is to be dealt with.
But it's great exercise.
That's true. And it develops your night vision tremendously, really, because
yeah.
It's mainly when you're really walking around. And, you know, I mean, what else? Disappear.
Well, again, it's
completely, without a trace. You must disappear after dark without
right.
a trace.
Oh, I wanted to make one comment. I think, again, the devil being in the details on all these ordinances and the reason...
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Yeah, thank you. The reason I think it's really problematic is it's trying to parse out the different types of expression that people are allowed to have, whether you be a musician or someone sitting down with a sign. They're all forms of expression, and you know, how can they legislate one being okay and the other not and keep First Amendment rights, I think, appropriate. I think that's really the task here.
I think that's well put. We've been talking with Christopher Smith, who has hung in here for an hour and a half. I guess that bumped our next guest ahead half an hour. We're going to hope she's still waiting at the phone line, or possibly she probably won't be waiting, but she will be available. Christopher, is there more you want to say before we leave you off into the... You take off into the daylight hours to wander around?
Well, no, other than it was a pleasure coming in today. I hope this issue will be revisited, so perhaps we'll have a chance to talk about it again before the actions that are pending in the next few months.
I know that they're going to do this stuff on Tuesday, but then we'll talk about it.
And if anyone's interested in writing me about this, send me an email. If I can give my email address,
sure,
it's OCOCSID@yahoo.com. That's OCOCSID@yahoo.com. Send me an email with your comments or thoughts, and you know, if anyone who wants to help do some follow-up research, because I am interested in doing that, and I have just fallen asleep at it for the last few years. But
well, we're going to wake you up.
I bet you will.
Sleeping is illegal in Santa Cruz under certain circumstances.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Hey, thank you, Chris.
All right. Sure, bye-bye.
So if you missed that number, you can always give a call to 423-HUFF during the phone, during the show, because we are on, the voicemail's on 24 hours a day. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you, give you Chris's email, and I'll pass on messages to Chris if you got some things. Perhaps you may not have a computer, but you want to give him a message, and I'll forward that. So that's good. Well, you're still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we're going to be carrying on. And you have an opportunity to call in if you want. If you have any comments, 427-3772. It is an available number, and hopefully you're available as well.
Come as close as the air, sharing a memory of gray, and wander in my words, dream about the pictures that I play of changes. Green leaves of summer turn red in the fall, to brown and to yellow they fade, and then they have to die, trapped within the circle time parade of changes. Scenes of my young years were warm in my mind, visions of shadows that shine, till one day I returned and found they were the victims of the vines of changes. The world spinning madly, it drifts in the dark, swings through a hollow of haze, a race around the stars, a journey through the universe ablaze with changes. Magic will glow in the night, all fears of the forest are gone, but when the morning breaks, they're swept away by golden drops of dawn of changes. Passions will part to a strange melody, as fires will sometimes burn cold like petals